This is The Gardening Show
with Master Gardener Bob Harris
on WESB.
Presented by Worth W. Smith Hardware.
Call the show 368-WESB.
That's 368-9372.
Well, good morning and welcome to The Gardening Show on B107.5. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Eeyore.
All right. Well, we are just flying by the seat of our pants here. I was just like, I just woke up like 10 minutes ago. I'm not going to lie. So I'm like, oh, let's just get it on the air. So give me a minute to get it on Facebook Live. I do see that you brought in a little something.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool. So you can join us there, facebook.com/WESB107.5. Our phone lines are open for your, well, any question that you have. Doesn't matter what we're talking about today, anytime during the show, give us a call, 814-368-9372. And you can also send us an email, garden@WESB.com. What's on the agenda today, Bob?
I'd like to talk a little bit about bees.
Bees!
Yeah, and pollinators.
Okay.
Because I've had the question that people are just not seeing any bees at all. And I had the same thing in my yard, too. Even to the point where a little patch of clover I have in my yard, I haven't seen a bee in there yet. And like I said, I had the question, what are we going to do with no bees? And I talked to a few other people and looked around other places and just not seeing any bees. So some of the things that we can do, you know, is plant more flowers to help support the population that's there. But also, I started thinking back. In my day, and I'm talking about 50, 60 years ago, there seemed to be a lot of bees, even though, in my day we used DDT and arsenic and 7-dust, and we used a lot of it, you know, but still we had a lot of bees. And now, I don't use any insecticides at all in my yard. And I know the neighbors on either side don't use any at all either. None at all. And even the people across the street don't use any insecticide. But still not seeing any bees. So we have to help out where we can. I don't know the answer why. I've talked to bee people. You know, there's a lot of things going on that could be the problem. They still haven't been able to
Is it a verified problem? Like, is that just perception or is it reality?
Oh, it's reality.
Okay.
Yeah, reality that the bee populations are crashing. I talked to any beekeeper and they can tell you that if they've been in business a long time, that their hives just don't survive like they used to. And they all have their reason. You know, it may be a disease. It may be varroa mites. It may be insecticides. It may even be a possibility that, you know, most honeybees or all honeybees in America were imported here. There was never a honeybee here till we came from Europe. And basically, they just came from a few queen bees, so that possibly, due to inbreeding from just those few, that now the population is starting to crash as a natural occurrence of inbreeding.
Wow.
That's a possibility. But, you know, I'm not seeing our own natural occurring bees also. Not seeing many of them. I see lots of carpenter bees.
I do see that too. Yeah. Yeah.
I see lots of those, but the little honeybee and the American bee, you know, you just don't see a lot of them. I'm not. So we up and going now?
Yeah, we are. Yeah.
So some of the things that I'm going to suggest is we got to be the bee now.
The bee.
In our vegetable garden. And it's going to be hard to see, but I'll do my best here. First of all, I got a little paintbrush. You know, these are only like 50 cents a piece.
Oh, okay. A little thing.
Just a little tiny paintbrush.
Now, I don't know if we're in low resolution or what, but It's just a preview, maybe, hopefully, is it's pixelated like that. But
yeah,
hopefully they could see that. But anyway, yeah, it's a little tiny plastic handled.
Yeah, that's all.
Paintbrush.
The small ones are better.
Okay.
Don't use the big house brush. Small brush. So what we can do is inside the flower, there's male and female parts. The male part is the anther that carries all the pollen. So we can rub the paintbrush on that male part to get pollen, and then rub it on the female part called the stigma. It has a sticky surface, and we can rub it on that. That will collect the pollen, and of course, then the pollen can penetrate down the stigma tube and pollinate the flower to make fruit. So I did bring a few props here, and I've talked about this before, the squash plant, and what happened to the picture?
Oh, I just scrolled down.
Oh, okay. Most plants have female and male parts to them.
Yeah.
But some of our vegetable plants do not, like the squash and the cucumber. So this is a squash flower, and this is a male. If it was a female, it'd have a swollen part at the base of the flower, a green swollen part. So what we can do is even strip the flower petals back to expose the male part, the anther, and then we can take our paintbrush and just rub it on there, and you'll see lots of pollen getting collected right away. And then I don't have a female one, but I'm going to show you. Then we just take that paintbrush and paint the inside of a female flower.
Wow, neat.
And that way we will pollinate it because there just aren't any bees around to do it. That's with that flower. Now, the cucumber, that's a really tiny little thing.
You can't even see that.
Yeah, yeah. And this is a female because it's already starting to develop a little cucumber on there. So I have to find a male, get the pollen, and pollinate the female. It's got to be the same. The plant, you got to use cucumber to cucumber, squash to squash. And I can paint that on there to ensure that it gets pollinated and will develop fruit. So that's a way we can make sure we're getting squash and cucumbers and melons, any of those. Now the tomato plant, and you're probably not going to see this, but I'll describe it. The tomato plant has male and female parts on one flower. And they've devised their own system. They don't really need a bee. If there is bees, that's great, mm-hmm. but they don't really need a bee. They can be wind pollinated. But if we go through a period of time with lots of blossoms open and no wind, what we can do is just flick the plant a little bit or shake it. That will release a lot of the pollen. It floats around the air. And finally, hopefully, it will land on another flower of the female part, and that will pollinate our tomatoes. That's real common practice that they use for greenhouse growing tomato plants.
Just kind of shake them around a little bit.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, a lot of the greenhouses now have made a machine that that once in a while it will shake the plant so the pollen gets stirred up. And the pepper plant, again, that one, that has male and female parts on it, but sometimes we do have to help that one, so we can take our little paintbrush and just rub around inside the flower of the pepper plant, and we'll get pollination, and then we'll start to develop fruit. Because it is becoming a real concern, and you know, growing your own vegetables can be a lot of fun and very rewarding. So I want you to be successful. So it's a good idea to buy a little paintbrush. And keep it handy.
Pollinate yourself.
On those nice sunny days, they're like 10 a.m. in mm-hmm. the morning.
Okay.
Go out there and do a little painting in the garden there. And and you'll have a much better success that way, because we're lacking bees. We really are.
Hmm. Seems like I saw more. I don't know. Maybe it was just the perception, but I thought I saw more at the beginning of the season, but I haven't seen any in a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if that's anything.
Yeah.
Maybe because I had more of a dandelion.
That could be.
At the beginning.
That could be. Yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. All right. Well, if you have a question about pollination or you know, anything really, if
yeah.
you want to give us a call, our phone lines are open 814-368-9372.
Just a little bit more.
Yeah.
Don't be fooled by, I'm seeing a lot of carpenter bees.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah. They're kind of a large one and a bit darker.
Yeah, I thought it was just like a bumblebee, but my wife's like, oh, great, we have carpenter bees.
She, yeah.
I don't know why she knows, but she knows.
Yeah. They're kind of clumsy flyers. Well, mm-hmm. so is the bumblebee. But they're looking for a piece of wood to drill a hole. They always drill a 3/8-inch wide hole.
Really?
Yeah, they drill it deep into the wood. That's how you can tell
wow.
that the carpenter bees have been there. It's always 3/8 of an inch wide. And of course, then they lay their egg in there, and then it pupates and becomes a bee and exits that hole. So they can be a problem. And I am seeing a lot of those.
Yeah.
Again, that's part of nature's cycle and so on. If you lose one part of nature, another part's going to fill that void. So we are losing our honeybees. I say ours, you know, they're really not ours. Again, they're
well,
imported, but
yeah.
we're losing them. And it seems like, to me, there's mm-hmm. no scientific fact to this, but to me that the carpenter bee population is really growing.
And they won't pollinate, or are they also
they will pollinate,
but they're
sure.
just a hassle for
but
your
But they
house.
Can be destructive, yeah.
They're gonna ruin your wood.
To anything wood, yeah.
Yeah.
There are ways to combat them. There are neat carpenter bee traps, you know, I get kind of confused there because I don't want the carpenter bees on my house, but geez, I may need them to pollinate my apple trees and my squash plants. And so what do I do, you know?
Well, I have an easier answer. I just have some raised beds. I'm going to choose my house over my
my
yeah. little mini garden.
Well, yeah, if
but
I started,
you have like a whole orchard and the whole thing.
Yeah.
So.
If I started seeing hundreds of them, you know, that'd be different, but just a few of them I'm not going to be too concerned about. another thing I wanted to talk about. So that's it about pollination and the bees. So again, you may have to go to the paintbrush. As a matter of fact, you know, get the whole family involved, the kids. It can be even fun doing it. And the more you mess with your plants, interact with them, the more you're going to learn about them and the more successful you're going to be in the long run. So,
yeah, that's good advice.
So give it a whirl.
Mess around in the garden a little bit. That's all. All right, we're going to go into another topic. I'll tell you what, before we do that, we'll take a short break here, 30 seconds. We'll thank our sponsor, Worth W. Smith, and we'll be right back with The Gardening Show right here on B107.5 FM, WESB.
If you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford. With the weather heating up, stay comfortable with a room air conditioner at Worth Smith. They have plenty in stock. For your outdoor work, you'll find lots of wheelbarrows, all put together and ready to go, and a nice variety of new garden flags. A big selection of Carhartt clothing has finally arrived, along with spring boots for men and women. Remember, if you need it, you'll find it at Worth W. Smith Company Hardware in Bradford.
Just like that, we're back with more Gardening Show with Master Gardener Bob Harris right here on WESB. Phone lines are open, 814-368-9372, if you would like to ask the Master Gardener a question.
Okay, so I want to give a few hints about weed control. I know every gardener has a concern about that. So some of the hints that I've used through the years, and I'm sure people have other hints too. I always like to pull weeds after a rain or after I've watered a bed. They pull much easier in wet soil than they do in dry soil. I always try to pull a weed before it blossoms or right at the time it just started to blossom, because once it blossoms, then it's probably going to produce seed, which is going to drop to the ground or fly around in our yard and create more weeds. So it's a good idea to keep up with it. And the more you keep up with it, the easier it gets eventually. Nothing happens real quick in the garden. You know, there's no switch you can say, get rid of all the weeds in there, I'm done for the year. That just doesn't happen. A lot of people like to use landscape fabric over the top of their soil, or weed control fabric, whatever you want to call it. I'm not a big proponent of it, but I'll tell you some of the benefits of it. Yeah, it does block out the sunlight on the soil surface. Most weed seeds need that sunlight in order to germinate. And of course, it does make it difficult if the weed seed does germinate and start to grow. It is blocked off by that fabric. Some weeds can penetrate the fabric no matter how small the hole. Some can't. Some, those weed seeds are always in the air floating around, will get on top of the fabric and, of course, germinate there. And their roots do have the power to penetrate down in. And so you still can get weeds even with fabric, maybe a little less. So why I'm not a proponent of fabric, except for a few locations, is also by covering the soil, you're also blocking out a little bit of that air exchange where gases can come out of the soil and air can come back into the soil. You are slowing up that process, and that, of course, will affect the plant a bit. Now, some people will say, well, geez, I do that in a vegetable garden and I have the best vegetables that way. And so I'll explain some of the benefits, too. By putting down that black fabric, you can increase the heat of the soil. Mm. And most of our vegetable plants are heat lovers. They're all tropical plants. They love the heat. So that can be a huge benefit. But again, I'm going to say that one of the things against it is it can smother the soil. And one way to tell, I discovered many, many years ago when weed fabric was first coming out, and we were all using it, that after so many years, I have to refurbish a garden. Of course, you got to pull the weed fabric up. I noticed underneath the weed fabric, the soil was turning a grayish color, sometimes even a bit blue. And that's a sign that all the doctors use, you know, that that's lack of oxygen.
Yeah, something's not right here. Yeah. It's turning blue. What's going on?
And so that can be a problem. As a matter of fact, I can remember one landscape. A lady called me and said, those burning bush you planted don't look good, Bob. Can you come and check them out? And I had put fabric down from her request and then mulch on top of it. And I went over to the burning bush to inspect it. And as I touched it, it fell over.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. So I had to inspect further. So I pulled back the fabric, started digging around. That's all I saw was gray soil.
Mm-hmm.
The plant had its roots underneath the fabric and the soil had died off and it had rooted on top of the fabric.
Oh, wow.
To help survive.
Yeah, yeah.
So it didn't really have the thing that roots are supposed to do is anchor a plant. It really didn't have that anymore. It couldn't anchor itself anymore. And, of course, being real shallow rooted, it could dry out quickly, and it just wasn't getting the nutrients it should have. So that's one of the things that really put me against fabric. But, again, a lot of people have success with it, a lot of success with it. So I'm not saying to do it or not do it. I'm not going to do it in my yard. Not going to do it for anybody that I help out. But other weed controls is there's product called Preen. Preen, P-R-E-E-N. Preen, yeah. That's a tough one to spell, huh? Preen.
No final Q or anything in there? N is the letter.
That's a product that stops weed seeds, or any seed really, from germinating. It puts an invisible block over it that you can't see, but the seed can detect, and it won't germinate. So it's a good thing. I like to use it, used to use it, but I don't need to anymore. Put it on a new landscape. You sprinkle it, you know, according to directions, then you water it in. It's very, very important that it gets covered with soil, so it's in darkness, because sunlight will deactivate it.
Oh, dear. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go. You want to go to the phone?
Yeah.
We have somebody calling up here, so 814-368-9372. And good morning. You're on the air. Do you have a question for Bob?
Good morning. I'm driving, but I just heard you, and I have a quick question.
Yeah.
My big rhododendron bushes, for the very first year at 30 years, only bloomed a little bit on the bottom, so I went out to inspect, and all the buds were kind of dried up, and they were very, very large, and I'm amazed, and I thought, what could this be? And I know Bob will know the answer.
Yeah, and, you know, seeing a lot of that this year, not only with rhododendrons, but some of the other plants that develop their flowering buds 1 year and then open up the second year. So those flower buds got to survive a whole winter. Now, we had just that right type of winter where a lot of dry winds, not enough snow cover, that it desiccated, drew a lot of the moisture out of the plant. So those buds now can't open up. So you're just not going to have the bloom you've had in years past. It was nothing you did, nothing no insect did. It just happened to be that type of winter that really was hard on rhododendrons. And I'm seeing it all over, too. Some rhododendrons, well-protected, right against the house, didn't get the wind burn and so on. They bloomed great, but some of them in other areas that got those drying winter winds through them. Yeah, that's showing a little bit of effect on that.
Does that answer your question?
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you very much.
You have a great day. Be safe driving now. Eyes on the road. Thank you so much, and have a great weekend. All right, phone lines are open, 814-368-9372. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah, so we might see that on a few of the other plants too, like not only the rhododendrons, mountain laurel. They all developed their buds last year for this year. Hydrangeas, some of the hydrangeas, some develop their buds the same year that they flower, and they'll be fine. Just be aware of that. Sometimes Mother Nature throws us a curveball, and the garden will show those effects, and it's going to be different next year. So other weed control things, I like the old-fashioned way. I like to get right down on my knees and pull the weeds, of course, in wet soil, and try to get root and all if you can. If you have a weed that's really hard to pull, you may have to take a trowel or a screwdriver or something to loosen around it, and so that you can pull all the roots up. And that way you'll lessen the weed population, and eventually you get to a very controllable situation. You'll always have weeds. I don't care what you do. If you do the fabric, you do the preen, you spray herbicides, you'll always have weeds. It's just something we have to deal with a garden, and it's you just accept it and move on.
Yep.
We got another phone call.
Yes, we do. Let's go to the phones and have another question for Bob. You're on the Gardening Show. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you guys?
Good.
Very well. Thank you.
I just have a quick question. I planted some tomato plants, and they're turning yellow.
Okay.
Is it too much water? Is it the soil? What is it?
Okay. Yeah, yellow leaves, they mostly on top or the bottom of the plant? Or all over?
All over.
All over. Okay. Number one, that's a sign of low fertility to me, that you need to fertilize them. That's the first sign. Now, it can be other things, too. It can be that they're too wet. If a plant is too wet, it can't absorb the nutrients it needs, So they start to yellow the leaves.
Okay.
And then it can get real picky of whether the yellowing is in the veins or not in the veins, but in the leaf. And that can be signs of fertility also.
Well, I kind of think I've overwatered them because I water them a lot. So maybe that's what it is. But thank you very much.
Well, you're welcome. Yes. And that's a common practice. A lot of people overwater, myself included. You know, we look at the soil, we look at the plant, especially the other day when it was real hot. And the plants were wilty looking, even though the soil was wet. We get that feeling we should water it and when it's already wet, and that doesn't do the plant any good at all. Plants are going to wilt on a hot 89-degree day, no matter how much water they have. They just can't draw it up fast enough. So I know it's hard to do, but we got to watch our watering very closely.
Thank you very much for the phone call. Have a great weekend.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. Got a couple more minutes left.
Yeah. Again, one of the biggest problems in the garden is overwatering.
I think I've done that. I have the same, a lot of my stuff looking yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of us do that. And of course, when the soil's wet, the plant doesn't want to absorb water, more water.
Right.
Or it can't. And, of course, that means it can't get the fertilizer it needs, so the leaves start to yellow a bit.
Uh-huh. So, yes, fertilizer more.
Yeah.
I think that's something that we're making a mistake now that you mentioned it.
Yeah.
I don't remember the last time we fertilized.
Okay, yeah.
But I do remember the last time we watered.
And tomatoes do require quite a bit of fertilizer. Well. I was going to say something else about that, too.
Well, you lost it.
I lost it,
it's
yeah.
It's all my fault.
So be careful. It really pays to stick your finger in the soil and feel around. You'll get to know the feel of it, whether it's wet or not, and try to refrain refrain from watering if the soil is already wet or damp. But one thing, when I talk about fertilizer, never, ever fertilize a totally dry plant.
Mm.
That can set up a real chemical reaction to the plant. I've seen this happen, and it's quite amazing. It can virtually electrocute the plant by giving too many, and I'm not certain which way now, too many positive or too many negative ions. And in reality, it does electrocute the plant. So never fertilize a dry plant. Water it the first day if it needs fertilizer, and then the next day while it's still damp, then you can fertilize it.
Got it. If it's dry, don't fertilize.
Yeah, just
water. You're
going
to tear a hole in the fabric of the space-time continuum and the whole universe will blow up. Got it. All right. With that, we are done with another episode of The Gardening Show. So we'll be back next week right here on B107.5. Of course, during the week, we always have our email available, garden@wesb.com. So you can email away there, and we have our Facebook Live, of course, and we have On Demand at WESB.com. You can hear any of our shows from like the last 4 years. So there you go.
So Be the Bee.
Be the Bee was the original topic for today. Get a little like almost like a kid's watercolor paintbrush or something like that.
Yeah, do some painting in the garden.
There you go. Go experiment by brushing some flowers. All right. Have a great day, and we'll see you next week. B107.5 FM.